I want to talk about two things tonight. First, wanted to give a bit of an update on the Goldcorp donation situation. I was going to recap it, but I'm feeling a little more pressed for time. Are people familiar with the Goldcorp donation and kind of what's been talked about so far? Maybe a little bit. I'll really briefly detail it. And then after that, I wanted to talk a little more broadly about the student movement in general and in Canada and our responsibility and accountability to our communities outside the student movement. So on September 23rd, 2010, the new SFU campus at Woodwards was officially unveiled. And at that ceremony, it was revealed that the university had accepted a $10 million donation from Goldcorp, which is the world's second largest mining company. And therefore, the campus was now to be called the Goldcorp Center for the Arts at SFU Woodwards. So this raised some alarm bells, first off, because no one knew about it. It was largely kept under wraps, even from faculty and staff, and definitely from students and from the new members of this campus. And most importantly, because it was alarming because Goldcorp has an extensive list of human rights charges levied against them, largely for their work in Latin America. So some resistance came up around this. SAG, which is SFU Against Goldcorp and Gentrification, was formed. And they mobilized around trying to talk to the university, get a discussion going with the university about the donation. And the administration basically replied with due diligence was done. It's over. It's done. And so there was some faculty and student mobilization. A lot of groups on campus signed on to protest both the acceptance of this donation and the process under which it went down. And so I'm just going to briefly mention our four demands, SAG's four demands. First, that SFU remove Goldcorp's name from all SFU buildings and projects. Second, half the donation was allocated to the Downtown East Side as a community engagement fund. And so one of our demands was to wrest control from the university administration to residents' coalition, so to make it accountable to the community rather than to university administration. Third, that SFU must not accept funding from human rights abusers, and that we need to develop a transparent and accountable policy, so like a ethical donations policy, which heaps of universities have and other public institutions have. Fourth, and finally, that we recognize that I hesitate to say that these kinds of corporate interjections into public spaces happen because the governments are starving public institutions, but they definitely dovetail together. So this, as Allison was talking about, like this process of neoliberalization of public institutions kind of like provides this great space for corporate interests to come in and provide services that used to be considered public, or that used to be provided publicly. So fast forward a bit, we shut down a Board of Governors meeting, yada, yada, yada. And then we come up to just a couple of weeks ago, Micah Tucker-Abramson, who is one of the key organizers. She's a grad student here at SFU, and she was really involved with SAG. She, through the Freedom of Information Act, was able to obtain some documents from SFU, and they provide a really clear and interesting timeline of the events that led up to the Goldcorp donation and the naming. So I'm going to go through that briefly. So August 23rd of 2010, Kathy Diamento, who's the VP University Advancement, applied to the provincial government for the naming rights to be given to Goldcorp. And the application included a brief summary of the philanthropic activities of Goldcorp, but no details of the company's alleged human rights abuses. August 30th, a week later, the executive committee of the Board of Governors meets to discuss the motion put forward by Diamento and Michael Stevenson, outgoing university president, to name the center after Goldcorp. So this is a week after the university actually already applied for these rights. So it had had no proper discussion or there was no decision. There wasn't even any discussion happening among the Board of Governors before the official application went into the provincial government. And then the executive committee approved that. So that was just a small group of the Board of Governors that didn't include any student representation. And then after that, a university advancement staffer prepared a communique detailing the human rights abuses alleged against Goldcorp.
actually surprisingly pretty extensive and fair-minded, but that never, of course, went into the decision of the Board of Governors to approve it because it wasn't even available to them at the time that they made the decision. So basically SAG asserts that this isn't really due diligence as far as we understand it. Oh, by the way, all of these documents are public documents, and I have copies if anyone would like them. So this really, like, to us, like, the Goldcorp donation is just such a key example of how this intersection of starving the university, starving public institutions, creates this false crisis where, you know, we need to, like, rush in and save it with corporate funds. And I mean, this is the rationale that is getting bantered back and forth, like, from the administration, but even among students, among faculty, among, like, folks in the community. So this is something that I think a lot of folks have internalized as well. And it's not necessarily the case, obviously. I mean, we set priorities. So if you want to talk about the details of that, we can talk about that maybe afterwards. You can ask me or see the documents. But then I also just wanted to briefly talk about some larger issues that I and some others in the community identify as a problem within the student movement and within the move for public education, how these discourses and practices are contextualized within broader class and social justice struggles. So on March 16th, a few weeks ago, lots of folks from across BC attended a demo, the BC Ledge, and it was organized by various students and student unions. I was there, and it was really interesting. But for me, the most poignant moment was when we were returning to Vancouver. We were at the ferry, and just as we were coming onto the ferry, along with our signs and everything, there was this gentleman who was getting off work. He was a middle-aged gentleman, and he confronted us and started talking to us and asked us, quote, "Who should pay for your education if you're not going to pay for it? Working people?" And the workers' question really struck a chord with me, and I think a lot of other folks who have been involved in the student union, because this is a movement that is often critiqued as being a movement of privileged, middle class. Not middle-aged. More like spoiled class. It was galvanizing for me for a couple of reasons. First of all, I think that his charge is totally legit in the way that we communicate this issue and the way that we talk about it and internalize discourses, or like capitalist discourses of investment and privilege. What I realized when I was thinking about it more is that student movements have come to operate often out of place of privilege and entitlement, but it's not the privilege or entitlement, it's not that it's privileged or entitled to advocate for tuition-free, publicly funded education. Rather, what I find disturbing, exclusionary, and entitled is the ways in which we talk about affordable education. They're often discourses of exceptionalism and escape that we employ. So we draw on narratives about people struggling to get an education to better ourselves or better our quality of life and our opportunities. So in other words, to rise in economic and class stature. What I find really disturbing about this is that it draws on an implicit logic that poverty and exploitative work is something that we need to escape rather than abolish. So it's this logic of we need to get out of it and like plucking individuals out of it rather than a wholehearted attempt to attack a system that is exploitative and hierarchical for all involved. So what I also find disturbing in this movement is from talking, like from being part of the movement and talking with classmates and other students, is that students have become, I mean, we used to be the ones that you would call like these starry-eyed idealists. We are the most conservative, like cynics that I ever encountered. And it's this, I feel like it's this really strongly internalized, neoliberalized, and capitalist culture that have really effectively self-disciplined us and our sense of what's possible and our sense of what's up for negotiation in configuring a society based on values of inclusion and equality. So like that, the doc I found really stirring, like people felt, as Alison Hone pointed out, people feel like really personally responsible and crushed and failures because of their inability to work within a system that doesn't work. And I find that really heartbreaking. And we're continually trying to rationalize and devote the kind of blame back to ourselves and find a way to, again, escape from that pattern rather than address the structural problems with it. So I'm probably running on time. I'm just going to hit a few more points. I think that really what I'm calling for is that, you know, in the student movement, that we really recognize that publicly funded education and the student movement needs to contextualize itself as part of a broader movement for social justice and an egalitarian, quality-driven society. And that when addressing our tax, which so far have been like, pretty please, can we please have lower interest rates, and we have this little adjustment, which don't work, I think we really need to shift quite drastically and start thinking again about our own integrity and our community accountability and our accountability to this public that we invoke. So if the student movement is going to have any legitimacy in its fight for public education, then we need to recognize the ways that we are buying into capitalist configurations of worth and return, and need to, rather than breaking down class hierarchies. So if we really believe in public education, that is education for the public, rather than simply subsidized by it, then we need to fight for a system that is truly accessible to all, which means that it needs to be tuition-free.